people who were born there, who were born here. Some who came as immigrants. And you know, when you are talking to both sides, you find maybe their perception of what is expected of you is different.
Hello and welcome. You are tuned into the Find Your Voice radio series on CKUW 95.9 FM. Find Your Voice is a radio series that presents the life stories of new Canadians. These stories offer a portrait of newly immigrated Canadians to help build understanding, demystify stereotypes, and break down preconceptions. In this radio series on CKUW 95.9 FM, you will hear the stories, the hopes, perspectives, and challenges of new immigrants from around the world. The Find Your Voice radio project was based on the new Canadian literacy project called The Past is Another Country at the Winnipeg Public Library. Find Your Voice received generous support by Astral Media and the Campus Community Radio Fund of Canada, CKUW 95.9 FM, and the Oral History Center at the University of Winnipeg. On today's episode, you will hear from...
Nathaniel Ondiaka was born in Kenya. He is trained as a surgeon and is working towards certification in Canada so he can practice here as well.
In fact, before coming to Canada, I had, in the previous past, had an experience of living in another part of the world. And that was in Asia, the People's Republic of China, where I was for 10 years, from 1986 to 1996, on a tour of study. You get to a place and you find their culture and where you come from is totally different. So at least you have to do some readjustments. And it was a prerequisite that before we start our medical courses, we had to master the Chinese language, which was yet another challenge. So it was dealing with the language on one side and then trying to kind of get to know who the Chinese people are. Based on my own experience, I deduced that, you know, going to China was kind of, you know, being born again. You start from that infancy to learn about their culture. By the time you graduate, you have already infiltrated the system. You know who they are. Then you become friends. I was born in a place called Nakuru. It's the capital city of the province we refer to as Rift Valley Province. And it's within the Rift Valley, the Great Rift Valley. I think you've heard about it. Yeah, one of the natural wonders of the world that you can actually see from the moon. So that's where I was born. That's where I was raised. We grew up in the village. My father was a school principal, but he used to move around quite often because it will depend on where he had been posted. So we decided to go and establish our home in a place in Kakamega, where we stayed as he continued with his teaching. So village life was tough. Yeah. But the main focus, because, you know, my father was a teacher, so he really emphasized on investing so much in education. And that is exactly what we did. Like every year, the government would advertise scholarship positions in a number of countries. And most of the scholarships that were announced were actually from the East Bloc countries, China, Russia, Poland, all those countries. So if you are interested in going to any of the countries that were mentioned in the advert, then you just put in your application. Then you are called for oral interview. That is the first process. Once you go through the oral interview, then you sit for the written interview. Then you wait for your fate and see whether you have qualified or not. But it was tough because, you know, we were having this rift between the, you know, the East and the West. Yeah, there was a lot skepticism, you know, about those who are going to study in the East Bloc countries. Because there was always this imagination that you come back, you know, sounding like a communist. Yeah, so it was a bit rough, but all you were doing was just seeking knowledge. To come back with knowledge and, you know, help build our country. After my first degree, I applied to advance or to have some kind of specialization in surgery. So I did that, and then I also did this microsurgery. Yeah. And then upon graduation, I worked, but as a student, as an intern, in one of the local Chinese hospitals, which was an experience. Because like one of my instructors was, I think, a visiting professor at the University of Oxford. And he was quite good and quite helpful. Because, you know, he would let me do quite a number of things as he was observing. And what helped me to actually have more of trust from now my Chinese clients was the mastery of the Cantonese language. Yeah. So that one... Yeah, because most of them would come in and then they would probably have an excuse that they can't speak either foreign language. You know, when they see your facial appearance, they think maybe you cannot speak Chinese language. But when they realize that you can as well speak their local language, then they open up. And it was a good experience. So, yeah, in most cases, you know, once you get to learn the language, you learn the people's culture, and then you fuse into each other. So, yeah, that has always been my target. Get to a new place, learn the culture, learn the language, and you'll be welcome. It was a good experience being in China. And, you know, so many things also happened when I was a student in China, like the Berlin Wall. Yeah, that one came down when I was in China. So the end of that era of communism and capitalism, yeah. And then I also witnessed, you know, some of those events that took place in Tiananmen Square. Yeah, also I was also there when they happened. So many of us, you know, who had gone through schooling, learning about, you know, communism and, you know, how some other government, you know, relented the idea of communism and then capitalism. But you see, during my study in China, I didn't find so much, you know, difference in the two systems. You know, the knowledge I had about communism before I went to China is not what I found in China. Yeah, because, you know, I arrived in China and I was even asking myself, was it really worth coming to this country? Because, you know, everywhere you go, people are in uniform. You know, the Mao uniform and everything. And then everywhere people are riding bicycles, but they're always busy. Then all of a sudden, you know, changes started taking place. In fact, we started joking among ourselves that, you know, if you visit any part of China, it's always to equip yourself with a camera. Because you'll be there today, if you come back tomorrow, everything has changed. So change took place so fast in China. Yeah, and for the 10 years that I was there, what I witnessed, I don't know. It was drastic. Yeah, after China, I went back and worked in Kenya for a period of about 9 years. And I left China with a certificate on paper, and a life certificate. Yeah. What I mean is my wife is from China. Yeah. So we went back and, you know, settling was not, it was not easy. Because, you know, after staying out of the country for 10 years, going back, you find everything has changed. So it was starting all over again. Because, you know, marriage between, let's say, an African and a Chinese was not that common. And the process itself sometimes was a bit complicated. Because for my case, my wife was a medical doctor. In fact, a specialist in anesthesia. And for them to go through that schooling process, they were kind of, you know, only sponsored by the government. So there were expectations that after graduation, they would serve the country first before they are free to do their own things. So it was a bit kind of tricky. But we managed to go over that barrier and we found ourselves in Kenya. And in Kenya, as I just mentioned, you know, there was no history of, if there was maybe one of China, Chinese and African coming together through marriage. So, yeah, it was a bit of a, I should say a first or a second. But then I just advised her, you know, the best way to affiliate yourself with the community, you know, they might not understand who you are, and it is your responsibility to tell them who you are and why you are with them. So I think the first thing she did was, as she was going through the exams to be, you know, this exams and internship to be registered as a doctor in Kenya, She was meeting people who could not speak English. And her English was not that well because the language of instruction in China was Chinese Mandarin. Yeah, so she picked up Swahili very fast and she was welcome to the Kenyan society. Yeah, you know, my belief is if you go to a place and you don't want to impress other people's culture, you know, it becomes kind of conflicting. And people might resent you for not accepting their, let's say, their traditions or whatever. So the first thing one has to do is get to know the people, get to know their culture, be one of them, and life will be just fine. Yeah. So that's the same goal I told my wife, you know, when we arrive in Kenya, just make sure. People may not understand who you are. I may even take you to the village and they may, you know, they may stand afar because they don't know who you are. So it is you to bring yourself close to the people, tell them who you are and why you should be friends. And that is exactly what she did. And after that, she was really liked. In fact, before coming to Canada, and if I may just remind you, you know, when we were in high school, we had this subject called the geography. And you know, it dwelled so much on, mostly on Canada, US, New Zealand, you know, because of their farming activities. So though I had not come to Canada, but you know, I had a very clear picture of Canada, BC, with lumber, you know, the lumber industry, the prairies with farming and mining, and then the Ontario with the power generation. So, you know, it's kind of something that, though I was not here physically, but I knew Canada like the back of my hand. Yeah. But you see, the chances of just waking up one morning and saying, I want to apply to go and probably live in Canada or work in Canada, you know, it's not something that easily appears in your mind. But then I had a cousin who came to Steinbach and Gimli to train as a pilot. So he came back home and, you know, he started telling us so many stories about Winnipeg, told us so many stories about the culture of the people of Winnipeg and Manitoba, how secure this place is, how friendly the people are, that you could just, you know, park your car on the street, leave it idling. No one will touch it. What will stop it? Because it runs out of fuel. So I said, oh, if that is the case, let me try. So I went on the internet, you know, went through some of the conditions that they had put on. Because, you know, there are two ways of, mostly for immigrants from Africa, there are two ways of coming to Canada, either as a skilled worker or through the refugee program. Yeah, because, you know, there are too many places in Africa where there is, you know, some instability and then we have wars. Yeah, so I checked on the internet and I felt maybe the criteria was in my favor. So I filled out the forms and then sent them to the embassy. Then they confirmed to me, yeah, you qualify to go to Canada. I left Kenya. I arrived here October 26th of 2004. You know, the only challenge was coming to Canada, knowing the country, but not knowing if you have a friend here. So I still went back to my cousin and asked him, when you are in Steinberg or Winnipeg or Gimli, did you have any friend? Yeah, so he told me I had a very good friend, a very close one. So he said, okay, maybe one of these fine days, since you are going to Canada, we can just call him or write an email and see what he has to say. So we started communicating. Though the only thing we forgot was to, you know, exchange photographs. So we arrived in Pearson Airport. We cleared and then we are told, okay, you're on your way home to Winnipeg. So we arrive in Winnipeg. I have no description of this fellow. And yet he's at the airport waiting. So we're just sitting next to each other. And I think what made him not very sure about even asking whether I'm the person he was waiting for is the fact that, you know, I had my wife and two children. So the mere fact that, you know, my wife was from China just brushed him off and he said, oh, let me just sit and wait. Until we started speaking in Swahili. Then he turns around and says, are you this and this? I said, yes. So that's how we arrived in Winnipeg.
That's awesome. That's neat. And then, what were your first impressions of Winnipeg coming here?
I think the impression was good because I was spoiled by that guy, the guy who, you know, who received us here. He was, you know, so generous that we forgot, you know, we had to find ways ourselves in Winnipeg. You know, he did so many things helping us, you know, because when we had just arrived, the first maybe bad experience I went through was going to the bank to try to open an account. I think I did it the second day. And I was told, you know, I don't have any credit history. I don't know. You know, there was quite a number of conditions that I had to meet before opening the account. Because the only document I had on me that proved I had arrived in Canada was the landing papers and the visa that was in the passport. But that was not good enough to convince the bank, you know, to allow me operate an account. So he took me to another bank, explained to them the situation in which I was, and the next bank was quite generous. They allowed me to open the account. They allowed me to have a credit card. They allowed me, and I felt that was quite good. I didn't know in Winnipeg you'd also meet the people who were born there, who were born here. Some who came as immigrants. And you know, when you are talking to both sides, you find maybe their perception of what is expected of you is different. Because you talk to one side, they say, yeah, you are here, but it's good to note that for yourself, it might not be that sweet. But for your children, this is their future. And you know, when you look at the lifespan of a Canadian, it's almost close to 80. And I'm only halfway. So that analogy, I told them, you know, that one does not apply. Yeah, what is good for my children is also good for me. So it is how I have to get there that will count. Yeah. But you see, as you now get to start knowing about the, for the children, you know, it's they still have, you know, this agile brain. They learn things fast. They're in school, they have friends, and things happen so fast that it's even confusing to the parents. And I pity, you know, those parents who come because of wars, and, you know, maybe they are illiterate. It can really be a challenge. But it's also a challenge to even those who are professionals, because, you know, you have kids here who, they learn things fast. Yeah. And you start noticing the difference, you know, when you go out with the kids and they tell you, Dad, I think you have to step aside. I'm the one who's going to do the introduction. Yeah. Because, you know, for them, they realize they are already in the system. They speak that language. And, yeah, there's a barrier. But I also do understand why they insist, you know, on meeting some conditions. Because, you know, the way medicine is practiced in Kenya is different from here. And for my case, I'm from a third country. I left Kenya, went to China, did my medical course in Chinese. Then I come here as a Kenyan doctor. Then I have to put in the application. And you know, the application has to, you have to get, you know, documentation both from Kenya and then China. And that process is so expensive. Because, you know, it's not as swift as here walking into a government institution saying, I need this, and then they'll tell you, okay, give us 2 weeks and the document will be ready, which is a fact. It's either within those 2 weeks you already have the document, or if not, then they have the courtesy to call you and tell you, okay, we are sorry, give us more time. In some of those places, you write an email, you write a letter, and you never get a reply, so it's a challenge. Maybe if the, you know, the professional bodies were a little bit flexible, I think it would, it would make sense. And especially if they had a program where they would infuse these professionals with, you know, Canadians who have experience. You know, those are the best, maybe the best medium through which these people can be assessed, whether they have the, you know, the kind of skills to provide services to in Canada. So that's where I find it's a bit tricky. No, with here, you know, what gives one comfort? You know, there's that disappointment, you know, from the mere fact that you are not, you know, as qualified as you are not able to exercise, you know, your skills by providing services to whichever industry. So if they were able to impress, because, you know, we are coming here not as students, but people who have already been trained. So the only investment here, I don't know. Yeah. So if our skills were utilized in the right way, maybe, yeah, that would be kind of, you know, a gift to the Canadian system. Because we are already qualified, we don't need further expenses, you know, to become who we are.
You have been listening to the Find Your Voice radio series on CKUW 95.9 FM. Find Your Voice is a radio series of half-hour episodes that presents the life stories of new Canadians. These stories offer a portrait of newly immigrated Canadians to help build understanding, demystify stereotypes, and break down preconceptions. The Find Your Voice radio project was based on the new Canadian literacy project called The Past is Another Country at the Winnipeg Public Library. Find Your Voice received generous support by Astral Media and the Campus Community Radio Fund of Canada, CKUW 95.9 FM, and the Oral History Center at the University of Winnipeg. Find Your Voice was produced by Janine Legal, Naina Singh, and Scott Price. Special thanks to all the volunteers who contributed their stories. This could not have been done without you. Thank you.